Joining us on today's Innovative Ideas podcast is Edward Abrams, president of the Personalized Medicine Coalition. Previously, Dr. Abrams was also executive director of the Pennsylvania Biotechnology Association, where he spearheaded the successful effort that led to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's investment of $200 million to commercialize biotechnology in the state. Ed, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. Before we launch into our discussion of some of the more recent developments and challenges on the horizon for personalized medicine, could you talk just for a minute for people who may not be familiar with the field about what we mean when we're talking about personalized medicine?
Personalized medicine refers to the tailoring of medical treatment to the individual characteristics of each patient by linking therapies to precise molecular diagnostics. We can improve patient outcomes and decrease societal costs. That's the promise of personalized medicine.
So in effect, we're trying to match the right drug or treatment or diagnostic to the right patient at the right time.
Correct. That's our mantra. Right patient, right treatment, right time.
Now, doctors have always, of course, tried to practice more personalized medicine and tailor their treatments to their patients, but their ability to do so was very limited. One of the real breakthroughs among many, but one of the more recent breakthroughs, was the deciphering in 2000 of the Human Genome Project of all the genes that make up the human genome. I think estimated between 20 and 30,000 genes. I don't know what the final count was, quite frankly. But since that effort reached completion, I think the hopes were very high that there would be a flood of new therapies and diagnostics. Perhaps that didn't quite play out the way people thought it would, or as quickly as people initially thought it would. I think the degree of complexity turned out to be a lot higher than we initially anticipated. But what would you describe as some of the most significant advances in the field of personalized medicine since the Human Genome Project?
Let me go back to something that you just said, which I think is very important, and that is that physicians have always sought to personalize treatment. What is new and different is that they now have some scientific tools that will enable them to more precisely tailor treatments, particularly in the field of molecular diagnostics, which is connected to genetics but goes beyond that and includes metabolomics, proteomics, imaging, etc. Anything that better informs a medical decision. As long ago as 2000 BC, Hippocrates noted that it's more important to understand what person has the disease than what disease the person has. So he intuited where we are today in terms of figuring out what molecular characteristics each patient brings to their illness or wellness. And so what personalized medicine offers is our ability to move this paradigm forward and gives physicians new tools that they never had before. Sometimes physicians get anxious or concerned when we say we're offering something new, dramatic, and different. I would argue that it's the tools, it's the science that's doing that, but we're not really changing the way medicine will be practiced, only how it will be practiced. So we know that there is an escalating amount of knowledge being brought to bear from basic research on our understanding of individual characteristics. The good news is, while some of the progress is less rapid than we would like since the mapping of the human genome in 2003, there are any number of products that have come onto the market that better inform physicians' decisions. And a list of them can be found in our document called The Case for Personalized Medicine, which 2 years ago listed some 37 products that are making a difference today for patients. This is up from 13 2 years before. And I'm pleased to refer to some of them that may be well known to your audience. The poster child for personalized medicine is usually Herceptin, which only works to prevent recurrence of breast cancer in women who overexpress the HER2 nude protein. So that's an example of personalized medicine. But there are many other examples as well, including Gleevec, Herbitux, Vectibix, etc.
But you do see a flowering of these types of interventions in the cancer space in particular, I guess.
That's correct. Most of the products that I'm referring to are in oncology. But other fields, including cardiology, CNS disorders, have also been impacted by personalized medicine. So, for example, now there's a simple genetic test that will tell physicians how patients metabolize the anticoagulant warfarin and thereby get the dose right the first time, preventing excessive bleeding or not enough of the drug to prevent clots. And that's another example of a widely prescribed drug that is presently being personalized and adopted by physicians, albeit more slowly than we would like.
What do you think are the central issues that are facing innovator firms right now in their quest to advance more personalized diagnostics and treatments? And here I'm thinking of, is it regulatory issues? Is it reimbursement issues in terms of paying for value for molecular diagnostics that can guide those treatments so that you're encouraging the development of diagnostics?
I would say there are three major hurdles that influence the pace at which this change will occur, though I have no doubt that this is the direction that medicine is headed, because this is where the science points us. And those three hurdles are, you pointed to two of them. The first is the regulatory landscape is at best unclear. Second, we don't reimburse for value, we reimburse for quantity. And then thirdly, our educational systems are not set up to encourage change, even absent compelling evidence that there is no alternative. And so those three things are rarely large hurdles that condition how much investment is likely to go into what we call personalized medicine.
Right. And I think I read in one of your publications that, for instance, and correct me if this has since changed, that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services won't reimburse for a diagnostic that isn't meant to treat a condition for which there are already signs or symptoms or some complaint from the patient. But some of these diagnostics would tell you going forward how the patient's going to metabolize different types of drugs or their susceptibility to conditions that could guide medical treatment.
That is correct. So, for example, when FDA relabeled warfarin twice to encourage genetic testing in advance of its prescription, CMS, on the other hand, restricted reimbursement to coverage with evidence development, saying that there was an absence of enough evidence to clearly suggest that they should reimburse for that product.
Right.
And
right.
So they're now collecting the evidence, which lo and behold does show that you get improved outcomes if you test for how the patient metabolizes the drug.
But if you're a small firm with limited capital and they're telling you, well, it may be a couple of years after you get through FDA approval when you might finally see reimbursement, that could potentially kill you.
This problem.
Are there any best practices out there in the U.S. or anywhere else right now for advancing new regulatory and reimbursement tools for personalized medicines that you think we could be learning from or looking at?
Yes, I do. I think what's going to happen is, as more products come onto the market and physicians, regulators, and especially payers experience the benefits of personalized medicine, they will see that it's important to get our systems aligned. So it's my hope, and the hope of the Personalized Medicine Coalition, that we will learn from experience and learn from the impact that targeted therapeutics have had on improving outcomes and reducing cost. I'm the first to acknowledge that we need more collection of evidence to demonstrate that thesis. And I would also argue that we need greater investment in the collection of that evidence so that we can make the case more strongly. Personalized medicine is being put in practice around the country at selected high-profile institutions on the cutting edge of medicine, particularly in academic health centers like Harvard, Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, et cetera. But we need more evidence and we need more examples so that those best practices become the way medicine is practiced generally.
I believe that in its latest budget request, the FDA asked for, HHS asked for on behalf of the FDA, I think $25 million to advance regulatory science at the agency. In Europe, I understand the EU has created an innovative medicines initiative where they've devoted $2 billion over the next 10 years, or $200 million a year for the next 10 years. Is that the kind of level of funding? Is that an issue that needs to be addressed in terms of you know, are we putting enough directed resources at developing the regulatory tools for validating these things that will help speed them to market?
Well, I mean, your question suggests that we could and should be investing more monies in personalized medicine products, and I would argue that is the case. But I would also argue it's equally important to get our systems aligned so that FDA, CMS, and medical schools are all talking to each other. And I'm pleased that Dr. Collins and Dr. Hamburg at NIH and FDA, respectively, have already started that and are working together to promote personalized medicine.
That's right. They both seem to be very cognizant of the benefits and committed to developing the vision.
They truly are both leaders, and it's very gratifying to have them both in place.
Given that, in the second 10 years, so from now till 2020, what do you think are some of the likely advances we're going to see in the field? And what are your goals for the Personalized Medicine Coalition over the next several years, particularly in the wake of healthcare reform, the passage of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act?
Well, that's a multi-part question. Let me start with the last part first. We were very pleased that healthcare reform, which included an authorization for comparative effectiveness research, requires that research incorporate principles of individual variation in CER. And that's good news for patients, so we won't get locked into, as we feared we might when CER was first proposed, into one-size-fits-all medicine. So the comparative effectiveness research is going to be required in the future to consider subpopulations and molecular differences. So that's good news in the healthcare reform, and to the best of my knowledge, that is the first time that in law we have referenced principles of personalized medicine. Ultimately, our goal as a coalition, and I think our goal as a society, is that we no longer talk about personalized medicine as something different from the way medicine is generally practiced. So over the long term, what I'd like to see is that when we just talk about medicine, we are really assuming that it's going to be tailored to individuals. And that's not so far-fetched by a long shot, because as I said earlier, this is where the science points. And I think most patients recognize this. When they go to the doctor, they don't want to hear, let's try this, let's see if this drug works. They want to hear, is this going to work for me? And the good news is the pharmaceutical companies have gotten that message, and they know that the ability to say this drug may not work for everybody, but will work for you, is a very powerful message.
It's driven not just, I mean, obviously about concerns about improving the quality of care, but also trying to avoid adverse events that can be very destructive to patient and physician trust and, of course, shareholder value. And also the recognition that payers want more evidence about how the drug is going to affect subpopulations and for whom it's most effective. So it would be a win-win-win all around.
That's exactly right. And I'm pleased to note that the payers are part of the Personalized Medicine Coalition and, more importantly, part of the impetus to move towards this new paradigm. So the biggest news in personalized medicine in the past year or so has been the entry of the pharmacy benefit managers into the space to try to figure out ways to improve outcomes for their clients, patients, as well as reduce the bottom line. So this is, as you know, a win-win all the way around. The question is to get buy-in, to develop evidence that what we're saying is not a pipe dream, but could and should be a reality that governs investment, regulation, and education.
Well, that's a terrific note to end on. Ed, thanks very much for your time, and we look forward to hearing more about your work at the Personalized Medicine Coalition.
Thank you very much, Paul.